Okay, for those of you who know Daniel Mont, he's alive and well and in India, I think, or Bangladesh. I didn't come all the way from Oslo, Norway just to do this or to attend this this meeting. But Daniel and I have worked together on this topic, and he asked me to present. The good thing for me is that I can sort of gloss over his stuff and focus on my own, even though my name isn't there. Mitch Loeb is my name. I'm from an independent research organization, most recently from an independent research organization in Oslo called SINTEF Health Research. And our work is focused on living conditions among people with disabilities in the Southern African region. I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but I want to do justice to what Dan has put together here. And talk about disability and the evaluation of public health interventions. Dan has recently published in The Lancet an interesting article where he discusses disability-adjusted life years and presents some of the advantages and disadvantages to using disability-adjusted life years, I think they're called DALYs, as indicators of public health interventions. And I wanted to just give you some of the background. Disability-adjusted life years, a frequent indicator for the assessment of relative effects of public health interventions. And they, as the title or the name says, they explicitly incorporate disability. They're calculated basically by adding together years lost from premature mortality and the loss experienced by living with a certain by living a certain number of years with a disability. The overriding goal in using or creating disability-adjusted life years was to create a measure that could help enhance the allocation of resources battling poor health. There are certain advantages to using disability-adjusted life years. It incorporates the effect of disabling conditions into the evaluation of public health, something that probably wasn't done before. This particular area is I'm not that familiar with, so these are Dan's notes, Dan's words. The use of DALYs decouples epidemiological assessment from advocacy and creates a standardized measure that can be used in benefit-cost analyses. However, there are also certain disadvantages to using disability-adjusted life years in public health interventions. They're based on a medical model, which, it turns out, is at odds with the social model of disability that's incorporated in the WHO's International Classification of Functioning Disability and Health, which I think you're probably all familiar with. Furthermore, they ignore the impact of environmental factors and thus the difference of how people experience disability in different cultures. And on top of that, they don't register improvements in people's health, lives, and functional status from interventions, such as, for example, rehabilitation services that do not prevent or cure underlying medical conditions. They're based on weights which do not adequately incorporate the experience of people with disabilities, and they implicitly devalue the lives of people with disabilities. For a much further, deeper discussion on the advantages and disadvantages and the uses of disability-adjusted life years, I'm going to refer you to Dan's article in The Lancet. I have the reference here, and I'm happy to give it to you. I just don't have it on the slide. I mentioned the ICF, and for those of you who are familiar, you've seen this model many, many times before, just a very complex model of disability that takes into account not only body function and structure, the physical impairment that a person with a disability has, but also their activities and participation in society. Also taking into account environmental factors and personal factors that either hinder or help a person with disabilities to function in everyday life. Now we're getting into my stuff. What we in Norway were able to do was put together a set of questionnaires go to several countries. I think we've been to about 6 or 7 different countries now, and undertake nationally representative surveys of living conditions among people with disabilities. And we do that together with local disabled people's organizations and either university research departments or national statistical offices. So as a kind of consortium, we can put together a team that goes out, is trained by us, and collects information. This is just a brief overview of the kinds of questionnaires and the kinds of questions that we use. Two rather extensive questionnaires. The first one, in part A and B, looks at households, both individuals in households, and part B looks more at the household structure itself, looking at income, expenses, physical and housing environment, transportation and communication. For the purposes of this this presentation, what I'm going to focus on is the part two, what we call the detailed disability survey that includes something that we've dubbed the activity and participations matrix, which looks very much like the ICF checklist of activities and participation, if you're familiar with that. This is just a brief, I'm not going to show you a lot of numbers. I just want to show you the kinds of numbers that we were able to collect in Zambia. Most recently, that study was, or survey was finished last year. We had a total of 5,751 households. It's kind of case control study. Households having a person with a disability and households without. Total of about 28,000 individuals in these households, and almost 3,000 people with disabilities completed the second part of the survey on the detailed disability information, the activities and participation checklist. That checklist, as I said, looks quite a bit like the ICF checklist of activities and participation. We borrowed from it, we modified it a little bit. It includes information on 9 different domains, there they are, and 44 specific activities. A list of activities, and what we do is ask each individual who we survey, how difficult is it for you to perform this activity without any assistance at all? And they can answer on a scale from 0 to 4, no difficulty, to unable to carry out the activity. Of course, with responses for not applicable or unknown as well. So activity limitation, as the ICF indicates, is a measure of capacity. So we have that question, those answers, for each of 44 activities. In the same way, we can ask somebody about their participation restriction or their performance, asking, do you have any problems performing this particular activity in your current environment? That means with all the assistive technology, with all the assistance that you have available. The same kind of scale for answering from no problem to complete problem or unable to perform the task. What we find when we analyze the data, we take these 44 items and we add them into a kind of sum score that gives us an indication of an individual's activity limitation or participation restriction on a large scale. And the light bars in this curve are the individuals, about 2,800, people with disabilities and their scores on that scale from 0 to over 117. Somebody with multiple disabilities or with a disability that restricts them to a large extent would have a high score on this scale. And as you can see, there aren't that many people, reflecting severe disabilities. The dark bars on this graph indicate a small subsample of people that we chose who didn't have disabilities. And we asked them the same matrix of questions, and we find that people without disabilities, people who aren't identified as having a disability, do score above 0 on an activity limitation scale, the same with participation restrictions, we found out. What this does is, in our mind, in our methodology, it, in a sense, takes disability out of the impairment area and more into a life system area where anybody and everybody could find their place on that scale. The other thing it does is it allows us to look at a person's individual adaptation to their environment. I use very often when I work in the Southern African region an example that some of you may have heard before, but I ask people to picture two individuals, two 20-year-old women, both of whom are blind. One born blind and the other blind for only a few months because of an accident. If you ask them what their impairment is, of course they're going to answer identically. They're both blind. But whether or not that should feed into a public health intervention, or asking them how they're able to participate in society, where the woman who is recently blind would have a much higher score than a woman who was born blind and is adapted to her environment, would have far fewer activity limitations. So it opens up disability into a continuum that we wanted to present and look at. Just rounding out a little bit, this approach gives us some opportunities. Disability then is no longer defined according to a physical impairment. What I call in my presentation of our methodology, the what's wrong with you approach, which is often what's used in maybe not in the States, but in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa. It's very, people look at people with disabilities and wonder, what's wrong with you? Rather, issues of equality, accessibility, inclusion, and human rights, they become elements, the key elements in defining disability, and it's what I call the what do you need to become a fully active participant in society approach. Disability is thought of then as a process rather than a state or condition, a process that changes all the time and isn't a fixed state. The approach to dealing with disability shifts from fixing or repairing a deficit, a physical impairment, to the removal of barriers, including attitudinal barriers, that's very important, creating better access and improving social participation. And the domain of disability shifts away from the medical and towards the socio-environmental. In the work that we do and in this approach to disability, the inclusion of people with disabilities becomes a paramount element. People with disabilities aren't any longer thought of as patients, beneficiaries, or research subjects, but become peers and they're participants in the research that we do, and they should have some say in the decisions that are made. The impact of interventions which improve people's functioning do not change their diagnosis must be taken into account. And some challenges that this leaves us with if we use this kind of approach, it's changing our thinking of disability. That's one thing that I try to present, away from this dichotomy of dividing populations into disabled and non-disabled and looking at a continuum, placing everybody in a population along some axis of degree of activity limitation or degree of participation and restriction. And a challenge there also is to develop indicators that reflect this continuum. Public health interventions based on this is something that needs to be done. And finally, in society in general, to normalize or demystify disability. And that's mostly for the work, I think, that we've been doing in the third world. And I think that's...